Coming up on Fronteras, 20 years after Mexico and the U.S. signed a free trade agreement that swelled the number of factories along the border, activists are still unhappy about how the treaty deals with contaminated sites.
We think that NAFTA could have done much more to encourage sites like that not to have been produced in the first place.
Environmental regulation in the era of free trade. And Sheriff Joe Arpaio in Arizona has never faced a tougher re-election campaign, with November 6 fast approaching. The sheriff has started running attack ads against one of his opponents.
He is scared because he recognizes he's up against a better man who will keep his community safe. So we're right where we expect it to be, and these attacks don't scare me in any fashion. They show me that he's the one who's concerned.
We check in with the two men vying to unseat Arpaio, but first, the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created via an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among seven public radio stations and funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting as part of its local Journalism Center initiative. I'm Crystal Chavez. Smart electric meters are being installed in homes across the Southwest. The meters are smart because they're digital and have a wireless connection to the utility. Homeowners can also track their own electricity use, so power regulators and the electric industry love them because they save money and can save electricity. But there's a growing concern that the smart meter's low-level radio frequency is somehow causing health problems. And some say the smart meters are part of a plan to take over the country. Texas Public Radio's David Martin Davies reports.
Smart meters would seem like a smart idea. Save money, save power. But some people, like Dr. William J. Ray, are convinced the meters are making people sick.
A fellow came in from Greece, and he and his family came into their home, and they all immediately got sick. And somebody had placed, without telling them, a smart meter right underneath their bedroom.
Ray explained his views to the Texas Senate Committee on Business and Commerce. He's a former heart surgeon and the founder of a controversial clinic called the Environmental Health Center Dallas. Ray's testimony was refuted by Dr. Edward Gelman, an oncologist at Columbia University Medical Center.
They really do not have the ability to interact with people or with animals and cause adverse health effects.
Gelman was paid by Oncor, a private energy utility, to testify before the committee. He said we should not worry about smart meters since cell phones emit much higher levels of radio waves.
You know, I'm waiting for everyone to walk down the street and have seizures, but
yeah. It's not happening.
But it's not happening. But no, seriously, cell phones have been studied because there have been concerns. And in fact, there's no, in careful cohort and case control studies, there are no adverse health effects that have been attributable. So.
Great, thank you. That's all I need to know.
The issue of smart meters, which seemed so innocuous years ago, has blossomed into a crusade, not just for health activists, but also for the conservative movement and the Tea Party. They say the mandatory installation of the meters is a violation of personal liberty, privacy, and property rights. Pam Colquitt is a Dallas resident.
This is America, the land of the free and liberty, and I should have a choice. And I'm imploring senators and legislatures to put a complete halt to the government forced deployment of smart meters.
Another witness, John Marler of the group Texans United Against Smart Meters, told the senators that the smart meters were actually part of a sinister United Nations plan called Agenda 21.
There is an initiative of the Agenda 21 that wants to have the ability to control the resources of all nations of the world, and part of that is that it can be done best through the smart meters.
There is a real UN Agenda 21. It's a non-binding, voluntary implemented action plan for sustainable development. The 21 in Agenda 21 refers to the 21st century, but it's become a favorite fixation for radio talk show hosts like Glenn Beck.
The United Nations Earth Summit, Agenda 21. Yeah, that kind of sounds like Fahrenheit 451. I don't think that ended well.
State and local governments have considered or passed motions and legislation opposing Agenda 21. Last May, Arizona tried to pass a law that would prohibit the state from cooperating with Agenda 21. It passed the state Senate, but failed to become law. In Texas, there are about 6 million smart meters installed so far, but there's growing resistance. Wayne Richards, a Republican political strategist, told the committee about a San Antonio woman who took up arms to keep the smart meter installer away.
So she went in the house, she got her gun, came back, and he beelined it out of there and jumped over the fence.
The opponents urged the lawmakers to enact a moratorium on installation or an opt-out clause. Industry officials say it would be difficult for a utility to reap the benefits of smart meters if they're not installed uniformly throughout the system. And even though the mainstream may not take seriously theories of global conquest through home electronics, the Tea Party does have serious political influence, which could be enough to dumb down the smart meters. In San Antonio, David Martin Davies reporting.
Let's turn now to the latest story in our NAFTA 20 Years Later series. When the North American Free Trade Agreement was signed 20 years ago, one of the big concerns was how the treaty would impact the environment. Would factories rush south of the border to take advantage of lax environmental enforcement? Frontera's reporter Adrian Florido looks at the state of environmental protections in the free trade era.
After NAFTA was signed, eastern Tijuana experienced a building frenzy. One industrial park after another sprung up to accommodate the scores of American factories that came here in search of cheap labor. Magdalena Cerda is an environmental activist, and she's brought me to the edge of one of those sprawling industrial complexes, to some barren, empty, concrete basketball courts. It turns out that buried deep beneath these basketball courts, entombed in layers of plastic and concrete, are tons of toxic waste. In the mid-90s, an American battery recycling company called Metals and Derivatives shut down here. The American owner abandoned the site soaked in lead and other toxins. It's just upstream from a working-class neighborhood. It took Cerda and a coalition of activists and neighbors 10 years to get the Mexican government to clean the site up and to put in those basketball courts to prevent future digging. She says the Mexican bureaucracy had no experience with this kind of work. This site is Exhibit A for environmentalists who oppose NAFTA. They say the free trade agreement has allowed cross-border industrialization to boom while doing little to ensure that poor communities like this are protected. NAFTA didn't create any multinational environmental regulations. It didn't create a North American environmental police force, no fines for polluters. What it did create was the Commission on Environmental Cooperation, based in Canada. It's the body where citizens can submit complaints about contamination in their country, but not until after it's already happened. The commission then investigates those complaints.
That was really it, and that's really nothing in terms of establishing environmental standards.
Diane Takvorian directs the Environmental Health Coalition. It's the San Diego nonprofit that led the charge to clean up that battery recycling site in Tijuana.
The citizen submission process can work to a certain degree, but we think that NAFTA could have done much more to encourage sites like that not to have been produced in the first place.
If, based on a citizen's complaint, the commission determines that a hazard is going unaddressed, it publishes a report, what's called a factual record. That's what happened at the factory in Tijuana. For the citizens who'd been complaining for years, the report was like a stamp of approval, saying that, yeah, their concerns were valid. The report helped them finally convince the Mexican government to take action and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency to help. But that report took 4 years to complete.
And that was one of the shorter ones. So there are others that have taken 5, 6 years. Some have taken up to 8 years and are still languishing.
That's almost half the time that NAFTA's been in existence. And when you're talking about toxic waste near people's homes, that's enough time to do some pretty serious damage.
There was really a sense that that there was an inordinate delay and that this was not helpful.
Evan Lloyd directs the Commission on Environmental Cooperation. This summer, the commission committed to speed things up. Its goal is now to fully respond to citizen complaints within 2 years. Lloyd acknowledges the commission has a limited role, but says if not for the citizen complaint process, some pollution may never have been cleaned up at all.
NAFTA has, in effect, empowered or enabled Mexico to raise its environmental standards, its enforcement, to a level that is higher than it would have been without NAFTA.
But Takvorian, the environmental activist, thinks more could still be done.
This was a process that really says you can complain about your government and about the lack of environmental enforcement, but we're really not going to do anything significant about it.
In the 18 years that NAFTA's been in effect, the commission's received a total of 79 complaints of environmental pollution across North America. It's issued factual records for only 15. In San Diego, I'm Adrian Florido.
There's still more Fronteras coming up. High-profile Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio has never faced a tougher re-election campaign, with the election fast approaching. The sheriff has started running attack ads against one of his opponents.
He is scared because he recognizes he's up against a better man who will keep his community safe. So we're right where we expect it to be, and these attacks don't scare me in any fashion. They show me that he's the one who's concerned.
We hear from the two men vying to unseat Arpaio. That's next on Fronteras. We hope you'll stay tuned. But first, I'd like to remind you, Texas Public Radio is looking for your support during this fall pledge drive. If you enjoy listening to shows such as Fronteras, consider showing your support by becoming a contributing member. It's the right thing to do. Here's the number to call. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. In the last weeks before Election Day, the race for Maricopa County Sheriff is far from decided. While the long-serving Joe Arpaio still appears to be in the lead, one of his opponents has gained momentum, and the other is railing against charges that his candidacy is a sham. From Phoenix, Nick Blumberg reports.
Sheriff Joe Arpaio doesn't debate his opponents. So far this year, he's more or less ignored his two challengers, an independent and a Democrat. Then, 3.5 weeks before Election Day, Arpaio launched an attack ad against his Democratic opponent, Paul Penzone. The commercial's been panned for manipulating an old argument between Penzone and his now ex-wife.
He's tried to explain it away, but there's no excuse for hitting a woman.
The Arpaio campaign released a statement defending the ad as a response to, quote, vicious and distorted personal attacks from Penzone, who says he's been waiting for the sheriff to come after him.
He is scared because he recognizes he's up against a better man who will keep his community safe. So we're right where we expect it to be, and these attacks don't scare me in any fashion. They show me that he's the one who's concerned.
That concern might be fueled by a recent poll commissioned by Penzone's campaign showing him fewer than 5 points behind Arpaio. Anti-Arpaio activists have been hitting the streets for months with thousands of volunteers. One group, Adios Arpaio, says they registered 34,000 voters before the deadline. Now they're out making sure the people they registered actually vote, and they're attacking independent candidate Mike Stauffer.
Stauffer is obviously not a real candidate.
Brendan Walsh is director of the Campaign for Arizona's Future, one of the organizations behind Adios Arpaio.
There's no chance that he can win. So the only real alternative to Arpaio is Paul Penzone. If you don't want Arpaio in office, you really have to vote for Penzone.
Walsh's volunteers are spreading the message that a vote for Stauffer is a vote for Arpaio.
That's ridiculous. A vote for Mike Stauffer is a vote for Mike Stauffer.
Stauffer, whose campaign is mostly self-funded, has had little, if any, signage, mailers, or TV advertising, but he says he takes his message directly to the public, at events, on social media, by walking neighborhoods himself, and through volunteers. When asked how many volunteers he has, Stauffer replied,
I don't know. I have a basic group around me, and they have gotten people to help them. So it's been grassroots. So I couldn't tell you how many are active volunteers for me, and I probably couldn't tell you how many are actively supporting me.
In the same poll showing Penzone closing in on Arpaio, Stauffer netted just 3.4%. But he thinks voters responding to polls are afraid to say they support an independent, and when they cast their ballot, could overlook the R and the D.
My two opponents owe favors to people who get them elected. So they won't be able to solve the problems. I'll be able to without having to ask permission from party masters or from special interest masters.
Stauffer's foes posit different theories about him, that he's secretly backed by the sheriff and is in the race to split the anti-Arpaio vote. Others say he's just doing it because he wants to make a name for himself. And even with about $300 in the bank at last report and not much visibility, Stauffer has no intention of heeding the calls for him to drop out.
To come this far be a quitter just because they would be quitters in this situation?
For his part, Paul Penzone says he's focused on beating Arpaio, brushing aside a charge from Stauffer that he won't agree to debate.
No, we've debated several times. But at this point, if there's going to be a debate, it needs to be with the sheriff. That is the office I'm pursuing. Stauffer is doing his best to become relevant. Those days are long gone.
Early voting in Maricopa County is already underway. In Phoenix, I'm Nick Blumberg.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a Corporation for Public Broadcasting-funded journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations KJZZ Phoenix, KPBS San Diego, KNAU Flagstaff, KNPR Las Vegas, KRWG Las Cruces, KUAZ Tucson, and KSTX San Antonio. Fronteras is online at fronterasdesk.org. We're also on Facebook. We invite you to join the conversation and post your thoughts about our stories. And for headlines and updates, follow us on Twitter. Our handle is fronterasdesk. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Our theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening. And a quick note, we hope you'll support this public radio station to help keep quality programming on the air. This is the second to last day of Texas Public Radio's fall pledge drive. Here's how to make your pledge.